We are back, 1320 WILS. I'm Michael Cohen. You hear the terms like psychopath and sociopath, and you might think of the worst criminals in the world, but really it's not that uncommon. In fact, it's what, one in about 25 people are in fact sociopaths, including my next guest, Emmy Thomas, and she's written a book about it, Confessions of a Sociopath, A Life Spent Hiding in Plain Sight. Emmy, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, what is the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath?
It's a good question. Some people make a distinction. If they do make a distinction, psychopath is more somebody who was born that way, and sociopath is somebody who is socialized to be that way. But there's quite a bit of disagreement about it. It's kind of like autism. A lot of people, professionals will disagree about how extensive it is or whether it's a spectrum or whether we should only be diagnosing the most serious cases or, is Asperger's part of the autism spectrum, all this.
Do you think you were born as a sociopath or developed it?
I think that I had the genetic capacity. I was born with the genetic capacity, and then those genes were triggered by my environmental experiences, so a mixture.
Okay. In terms of bad experiences you think you had, or?
Yeah, bad experiences. I think there are certain psychological needs that children have. Like, they need to feel kind of safe and like their circumstances are predictable, mm-hmm. Even though they're not. That's like a childish belief that they're supposed to have in order to trust their parents and stuff. And I just never had that. And so it's interesting. I just kind of disassociated from my sense of identity mm-hmm. very, very early on, maybe even as an infant, as a 1 or 2 year old. Mm. And I never had a strong sense of self. And because I didn't have a strong sense of self, literally anything was, I was literally capable of anything, probably is a good way to describe it.
So
I just never felt like anything was off limits, and I never felt like I was a particular type of person, so it was very easy to wear masks and pretend to be something else.
So did you have your mother and father in your life growing up, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I did, actually, but it can still happen. I actually had it about when I was an infant of colic, and I cried, night and day. I actually had a ruptured navel because of it, like 23 hours a day crying. And you hear the stories, and they're like, we just left you in a room because we couldn't take it anymore.
And you believe that may be kind of the core of what led you to become a sociopath? Or?
Could be. Could be a lot of different things.
The term itself, does it bother you to use it? Or?
No, it doesn't bother me to use it. I know that it's used as an insult. Like, we call politicians sociopaths, and we mean it in a bad way. But I have never thought of it that way for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And now, to me, it's just like it's a diagnosis that I was given at one time.
How old were you when that happened?
When I got diagnosed?
Yeah.
I was about like late 20s, early 30s.
And what led you to go get, a checkup and a diagnosis there?
So I had had, every 3 years or so, my life would kind of self-destruct. Like, all the stuff that I was up to would just kind of crumble under the weight of its own, grandiose expectations, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, so this happened again. I got kind of kicked out of my job, and I had relationships end, and I thought, this keeps happening, and, I'm going to live for decades, and this can't keep happening every few years, so I thought, I need to figure myself out.
And you went to it. Now, what happens in relationships? How is it that things fall apart?
Well, a lot of it's, my fault, obviously. I pretend to be whatever in the relationship I think is necessary or whatever is easiest to kind of get along in the relationship. But eventually, I can't keep pretending. Nobody can keep pretending for forever. And so other parts of me will kind of creep through or because I'm spending so much energy on pretending, maybe I have, like, less patience for other things, or I expect them to, be a different person than they are.
So do you become mean to your partner, that kind of thing, or?
Yeah, kind of mean, nothing's off limits. Like, even like my best friend, we're still best friends. One time she came to visit me and I like kicked her out of the car, like in the middle of Los Angeles. And I was just like, sorry, I'm done with you right now.
Talking to Emmy Thomas, author of Confessions of a Sociopath, A Life Spent Hiding in Plain Sight. And now you say it's fairly common, right, for sociopaths to be out there?
Well, yeah, the highest statistics I've heard is 1 in 25, but again, it depends on how you define it. Is it like a spectrum? If it is a spectrum, then I'm on the spectrum, and that's true. Mm-hmm. I've heard other people say, though, that no, it's really super rare, and they have to have basically no functioning, like empathy or no connection to their emotions. Mm-hmm. And those people, and that would be very rare. So it kind of depends on how you define it. But if you define somebody who has, you know, impaired empathy, again, it's like the autism spectrum. How seriously does someone have it?
So would you say you have no empathy at all, or?
No, I would actually say that there are two types of empathy. There's cognitive empathy and there's affective empathy. Affective empathy, we think, is from mirror neurons in your brain. You see somebody crying and for whatever reason in your brain, you get sad too, right? So I don't really have that. I have cognitive empathy, which is the ability to kind of imagine what it's like to be in somebody else's shoes.
Okay. So do you, when you see someone suffering or in pain, do you does that affect you in any way, or?
I recognize it as being kind of a rare circumstance. If somebody's crying or something, I recognize that this is, you know, I can't just keep acting as I would normally would, as if somebody weren't crying. And then I try to be sensitive to it because I know that in the past that it's upset people if I'm not sensitive and kind
react.
Of, tiptoe.
Do you cry yourself?
Yeah, I do cry myself.
What makes you cry?
Probably the thing that makes me cry most frequently is like beauty, like beautiful music or beautiful art.
And you'll start crying because of just looking at art, you're saying?
Yeah, or listening to, you know, a particular beautiful, I'm like a musician, so really beautiful music will, I think, you know, even beautiful sunsets, stuff like that. I am sensitive to beauty, maybe.
And what about in terms of having conflict and arguing with people and fighting? Is that something that you do easily, or?
You know, it's interesting. I would say, generally speaking, because I don't have like the same sort of connection traditionally. I haven't. I've been working recently on getting a greater connection to self. I am not offended by certain things. You know, like I don't get afraid. I don't get rattled. I don't get intimidated by people. So it's easier that way.
And so does that mean you find yourself in a lot of arguments, or?
I think I find myself accidentally in a lot of arguments because people expect me to back down. Like just, and this happens all the time to me for whatever reason. Like last week, somebody almost like got out of their car and started, you know, maybe doing who knows what in a parking lot because they thought I was driving down the wrong way. And I was like, okay, but that wasn't like apologetic enough. Like I don't really have the ability to show contrition.
So, they're getting angry. Now, do you get angry yourself, or is that not an emotion you have?
So sometimes I do get angry. It's kind of rare, and it kind of comes out of nowhere. Usually when I get angry, I feel like I'm already following the rules, you know, whatever the society's rules are, and somebody still thinks that I'm not doing enough. That's usually what will trigger it. It probably happens like once every year and a half, maybe like 9 months. I've gotten a lot better about, you know, talking myself down from it.
Do you have to keep reminding yourself of what the rules are society-wise?
Yeah. It's like a, kind of like a checklist. Here are all the things that people think are offensive and, like, don't do these things.
I'm talking to Emmy Thomas. Her book, Confessions of a Sociopath. What does the psychologist do after they tell you that you're a sociopath?
Yeah, it's a good question. A lot of psychologists don't think that there's any treatment. But they thought that same thing about borderline personality disorder until they found a treatment. I actually think that there is a treatment. I have been seeing a therapist for the past few years. I think that my own opinion is that the root cause really is like this weak sense of self, right? And out of that kind of lack of identity, sense of that you're a specific person that has preferences and dislikes and likes and whatever, comes most of the symptoms. I do think there's a genetic component. I do think there's a brain component. I have had brain scans, and they, you know, like I had, it was not for this, it was for sleep. And he kind of took me aside, and he's like, you know, you show a very, very low area of activity in the part of the brain that we generally associate with empathy.
Okay. So do you take any medication that helps? Or?
There's not really medication that would help that particular thing.
Okay. So has there been any change in your sociopath qualities, would you say, over the years? Or?
Yeah, I would say so. Here's kind of like an interesting thing, and it's a little bit counterintuitive. So I used to be very, very manipulative, all the time manipulate. And it was actually because I didn't know any other way to be. Because in my world, I didn't conceive of myself as being a person that had like a true preference, like a default. Like if you take everybody else out of the equation, then I would prefer what? Chocolate ice cream. Instead, I made every decision in terms of how I predicted that it would affect the people around me. So I would only choose chocolate ice cream if I thought it would, you know, affect the people around me in a way that I preferred. And when you think that way, you're always going to be manipulative because mm-hmm. you're constantly trying to predict and get a particular reaction out of people.
Yeah.
So
would you sometimes want to get negative reactions from people?
Oh, yeah, sometimes, yeah, you know, to upset people. Yeah, and it was very easy. I'm very good at getting particular reactions out of people because mm-hmm. that's all I had ever done in my life. But once I realized, you know, I had started associating more with a sense of identity, mm-hmm. once I realized that there was a preference there, deep down, forgotten, buried there, then if I was just very selfish and if I just focused solely on my own needs, that's how I learned not to manipulate.
Interesting. So really becoming more selfish helps you?
Yeah, at least in terms of not manipulating. Mm-hmm. It was always considering other people and how it would affect other people that caused me to manipulate.
Hmm. And what's, are you in a relationship now?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is this something you tell someone right away, like, hey, I've been diagnosed as a sociopath?
You know, it's a little bit tricky kind of coming out as a sociopath to anybody, to people that you work for or work with or anything. I find that it is probably not a good first date conversation, yeah. but you do need to come out quickly, especially somebody like me, where it's pretty easy to find out that that's true about me. You know, if you like do a little deep digging or whatever.
But how does it work? If your partner knows you're a sociopath, how does that affect the relationship? How do you guys get along together?
I think it would be the same with, you know, you understand your partner's bipolar, or you understand that your partner is borderline or is, you know, has Asperger's or something. Mm-hmm. You just don't expect certain things from them anymore, you know, and as long as you kind of understand this person's not, doesn't have the capacity to do certain things, if mm-hmm. you're okay with that, then it works. If you're not okay with that, you know, if you really need somebody to empathize with you and you really need somebody to feel what you're feeling in that moment, then, you know, it's obviously not going to be a relationship right. that works.
Well, isn't that part of what a relationship is, though, to have that experience?
I guess so.
Uh-huh. Are you going to have kids? Is that something you want?
Kids would be interesting. You know, I think that I've gotten, like, a better perspective on people in general and, like, respecting people's kind of boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, in some ways, I might even be better than this is like kind of haughty sounding. I might even be better than normal people in the sense that I wouldn't want to, you know, I have such a sense of not interfering with people's boundaries now. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of the societal rule that I've adopted. And I think a lot of people naturally see children as an extension of themselves. So mm-hmm. that would be one way in which maybe it'd be okay.
So your philosophy is you don't like to violate boundaries with people. Is that what you said?
Well, that's something that I've learned, yeah, in the past few years.
Because like, that gets you into trouble when that happens?
Yeah.
You just found people at some point yelling at you over something or being upset with you for some reason?
Well, you can't really have any sort of long-lasting relationship, work or romantic or friendship or any relationship if mm-hmm. you're constantly violating people's boundaries. They're just not going to, like, put up with it after, you know, maybe, like, 3 years is, like, the maximum.
Really? And then after 3 years, that's when that's the breaking point you found?
Yeah, some people earlier. Some people, it's like they won't put up with it at all. 2 weeks and they're done.
Do you think if you were to become a mother, you think that you'd feel some empathy at that point? Or?
I don't know if I would, like, feel the empathy. I think, like, my cognitive empathy, I almost feel like, because you know, like somebody who's, I don't know, blind or something, may mm-hmm. have, like, a stronger sense or will use their other senses in a different way. I feel like because I don't really have the effective empathy, that the cognitive empathy is, like, very robust,
I see. And what about your parents? Are they the longest relationships you've had?
My relationship with my parents? Is that the longest relationship?
Yeah, what is that like? Since you said every 3 years you have issues, how's that relationship going?
Yeah, well, you know, like, my parents, it's interesting, like, you know, I say there's a genetic component. And I would say neither of my parents have, like, this strong sense of empathy, and they don't have, like, a strong sense of, haven't traditionally, at least, a strong sense of boundaries. So it's like, you know, you see these dysfunctional families, and you're like, how can they all function that way? But it's because they've all learned to be dysfunctional together.
Mm-hmm. Someone's listening, and they wonder, hey, I wonder if I'm a sociopath. Is there any kind of any indication that they should take note of personally that would tell them yes, they are?
You know, it's a good question. I get people all the time that read the book or read the blog and then say, you know, I really think that I'm a sociopath. What should I do about it? And there's not, like, a good answer right now. There's kind of a, well, if you feel like this kind of matches you now, maybe it's going to explain some of your behavior and maybe that's going to help you understand yourself a little bit better and, you know, maybe change your behavior a little bit so you can have like a more stable, happier life for the people around you. But there really is like no kind of treatment
for that,
accepted treatment. Yeah. So there's kind of nothing to do. And a lot of people, if you went into see a therapist and said, I think I might be a sociopath, you know, a lot of therapists or psychologists, they won't treat you at all. You know, they don't want to be involved with that. There's been some studies that suggest that when sociopaths get therapy or, you know, any sort of psychological treatment, that they actually get worse.
Wow.
But a lot of those studies, I think maybe all of them, are done in prison. So you can imagine that, like, in prison, they're incentivizing manipulative behavior anyways. You're trying to get parole. You know, you're trying to trying to look at, like, you're getting better. And so, you wouldn't get better in therapy. You probably just get better at parroting what they're expecting on the parole board for you to say.
One last thing. Now, if human relationships are so difficult, what is the thing you most enjoy, would you say?
About being a sociopath is probably not living by fear. You know, like, not, I see the people around me, and I see how, like, some of them too, like 80 or 90% of the things they do in their life are fear-based decisions. Like, they don't want to do hardly any of the things they're doing it. They're not doing anything that they like to do or want to do, and they're just doing it because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. Afraid of, you know, not making the money, or afraid of, you know, somebody being unhappy with them. And that's something that, you know, I've never really had to experience, at least not in any real serious way.
So do you find yourself doing a lot of things alone, or?
No, I'll do stuff with other people. I just, and here's the thing, you know, have you ever known somebody who's just truly themselves and is always themselves no matter what? And then everybody's just like, that's who he is, you know, like some artists or, you know, especially musicians that we know, we just let them be whoever they want, you know?
You're comfortable, it sounds like, in your own skin.
Yeah, comfortable.
No feelings of anxiety or depression, anything like that, huh?
No. Not really. I mean, like, here and there, you know, when I've gotten, like, kind of stuck mentally, but generally, no.
That's learn a lot more. The book is Confessions of a Sociopath, A Life Spent Hiding in Plain Sight, Emmy Thomas. You also have a blog, you said?
Yeah, sociopathworld.com.
Sociopathworld.com. The book, again, Confessions of a Sociopath, Emmy Thomas. Emmy, it's been very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.